welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Matthew Penny is in the building. We're doing a quick 2022 NBA draft recap today. As you can tell, like, there's color back in my skin now, but my eyes are still sunken back into, like, my brain. You know, Penny, you look well-rested, as always.
I'm not.
That yeah. Alabaster skin, the Ed Helms haircut. We're rolling. What's up, Ben?
You look like you got a haircut, or at least brushed it, or you, like, came out of the draft wind tunnel, and you're good. I got a little color. I was at the beach today for a few hours. The funny thing about kids and the funny thing about the draft is they don't care. So I was still up, like, super early the next morning, super early the next morning after that. So I haven't really officially caught up yet. That first day, though, after the draft, that it kind of hurt. Like, I sat on the couch for, like, an hour, just, like, not moving. I was, like, on my phone. I'm like, it's been an hour, and I haven't really done anything. So the legs are getting there. We're getting back under ourselves. We had a few workouts. Not 100%, but on the pathway to getting back to 100%.
Yeah, no. I've tried to do a couple workouts. My body still has not responded to the workout yet. The day after the draft, like, I had to go to the mall. It's end of financial year here in Australia, which means there are all these sales that are happening. You know, you buy things and break them off on your taxes. So this laptop that I'm recording on is still the old laptop, but I went and bought a new laptop because this laptop is 10 years old that I'm using. So I went and did that. And then afterward, Laura and I went to a netball game here. Shout out to the Melbourne Vixens going to the final in the Suncorp Super Netball League. One of the most fun games I've ever been to in my life for any sport. Like a 10-point comeback in the fourth quarter, buzzer beater, like, winner, all this stuff. So, like, that was even exhausting. Like, on the night where I was, like, trying to relax, it was still just, like, an emotional, like, exhausting thing that kept happening. Yesterday I watched three movies.
Hey, there we are. I love how it's exhausting. Like, I sat in that chair, I was pounding pretzels, I had three light beers, I am pooped. That was a life choice and decision. So I'm glad you got your movie fix in too. It was unbelievable, like, the last few episodes. Like, what have you watched on TV? I rattle off a few things. Like, I haven't watched anything. Like, this is a broken man right now that we have to piece back together. And it's happened now, 3-4 days post-draft.
No, it has already happened. I have watched three movies that just came out in 2022. We'll talk about them at the end, including something that is just, like, guaranteed to be one of my three favorite movies of the year. It's perfect.
It's the off-season, officially.
It's not the off season yet because Kyrie is back on his bullshit, but we will see how it goes. Oh, that's the Boston in you, Penny, you know? Okay. So we're going to talk Paulo. We're going to talk Chet. We're going to talk winners and losers. We're going to talk just some of the picks that we liked, some of the picks we didn't like in the second round, and, you know, the guys that, you know, went undrafted maybe a little bit. We want to talk draft pathways as well. Just, you know, overtime elite, still nobody has been drafted from there. And, you know, the Ignite program, I don't know how they would classify this year in terms of success or failure. We'll talk about that. And then we also want to talk about just guys like Pat Baldwin and Peyton Watson and, you know, some of the surprises. David Roddy, you know, again, is fascinating to me for a number of reasons. Like, we're going to dive deep into all of that, but let's start at the top of the 2022 NBA draft. Matthew Penny, you have done intrepid reporterly work into this.
A little bit.
By that, please, for the love of God, do not aggregate this. We are not, like, this. Matt knows some things, but, like, and I know some things too, but, like, God, we're not, like, serious when we say that.
Amongst friends.
Yeah. Okay. Penny, Paulo, when Paulo goes number one, like, what is your immediate thought?
Surprise, shock, awe.
Yeah.
Despite the Vegas lines, I thought it was, like, somebody weird set, like, a bad bet and the motherboard went nuts, but they were right, which is just completely insane to me that Vegas scooped everybody. Vegas scooped Woj, which doesn't really happen. And which, then it, like,
unscooped, by the way,
and,
like,
re-scooped, and it was yeah, just all the scoops.
So Ben, I believe Ben Fox over at VSiN, Ben Fox over at VSiN wrote about this, and the first surge on Paulo, it would seem, was essentially just value based. Like they thought Paulo at 12-1 was way too high and it got bet down. And that this was Sunday going into Monday of draft week. It just got bet down. Like it was not a situation where there was inside intelligence apparently. Now I'm a little bit skeptical on the second surge where Paulo became the favorite on Wednesday going into Thursday morning. And then Woj tweets that it's Jabari Smith at, you know, Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paulo Banchero, 1-2-3 is still the anticipation. And then the market obviously reacts to that, and it's Jabari Smith at -900, I think, going into 7:15 before the draft, so 40 minutes before the draft. It's nuts. Like I do wonder if someone found something out the second time, the Wednesday going into Thursday surge that made Paulo the favorite before the Woj tweet that made Jabari like the -900 favorite.
And Paulo was +2,600 like a month ago. We were all dumb. We should just bet on the top three guys. Why wouldn't we do that? Anyway, so for Paulo Banchero, for his camp and his representation, they didn't know what was happening until 7:40 that night and had final confirmation about like 7:50, 7:53. He did not visit Orlando. He did not work out for Orlando. He met them once for an interview in Chicago, then did a follow-up call or Zoom or something along like the lines of that. And it just takes such stones by the Orlando Magic that they kept their move so close to the vest. They believed enough in the tape that he was going to be their guy. Was him not going there part of the plan? Some elaborate smokescreen? Maybe. Who knows? Was it to leverage for more picks and he was still their guy and they'd go down at 2 or 3? Maybe. Who knows? I find it interesting, though, this is also the second time in as many years that the Magic have drafted a player in the lottery that did not work out for them prior to being drafted. He joins Jalen Suggs in 2021 because Suggs kind of fell into a lap, slid a little bit. So I went back, and on the broadcast, now knowing what we know about the behind the scenes, it was this cool, surreal moment between Paulo and his draft table when his name was called. And he was like legitimately surprised. He knew 10 minutes before that, but still, it's like, I can't believe I'm going first. They weren't necessarily prepared for that. And you can see the surprise on his face. And even when he's shaking the commissioner's hand, giving him a hug, taking a picture, that he can't believe it. He's just like in shock. And people close to the situation tell me the day before the draft, Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith Jr. and all the people around them, they were just as much in the dark as we were. Apparently not the bettors in Vegas who adjusted lines like that. So thank you for the drama. Thank you for the theater. And this is why I love the NBA draft so much. As much as you think you're prepared, and we say there's not going to be too many surprises, we at least had a huge surprise go first overall for Paulo Banchero to the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, and I kind of want to talk about the lack of surprises throughout the rest of the draft later on, but we got the biggest one. Like, that's the coolest thing in the world to me. Yeah. Like, Orlando was able to keep this thing quiet. And I've seen some people in the days following saying they don't understand why Orlando felt the need to keep this as secretive as they did. Like, were they playing four-dimensional chess when, a normal game of chess will suffice, right? And look, I think it's valuable to keep your intention secretive at the end of the day. I really do. I think that other teams not knowing what's going on is an institutional advantage for you. Now, the reason for that is you never know what the other teams are going to want until you get the intel on who they want. It seemed like throughout the course of draft week, the week before draft week, Houston was pretty set on Paulo, which meant that if they moved up to one, they were going to take Paulo. If Orlando by that point decided that Paulo was not their guy or was their guy, then Houston, they had to stay ahead of Houston basically. And then with Oklahoma City, was it possible for them to move back from 1 to 2 to pick up additional assets? Probably not. It seemed like Oklahoma City was just pretty set on Chet and they felt pretty good that Orlando was not going to take Chet at the end of the day. So yeah, I think that had the circumstances been a bit different and Houston, for instance, maybe would have liked Jabari Smith more, or Oklahoma City would have liked Jabari Smith more, there would have been a real advantage to sliding down the board and picking up an additional asset, in large part because nobody would have known what you were doing. It just ended up in this circumstance that there was an even top three. Houston had evaluated the same guy that Orlando did to be the best guy, it seems like. And then Oklahoma City knew that both Houston and I don't know if they knew Orlando liked I don't know if they knew Orlando liked Paulo or Jabari Smith, but it felt like Oklahoma City felt pretty good that Chet was going to fall to them at two. And because of that, there was no value to be had. But this could have gone a different way, and there could have been value to be had, which is why there is value in keeping it secret up until the moment where it goes public.
I don't think it really benefits you to have it out there, unless it's a leak to throw everybody else off the scent. You're not great. So they know what you're doing at one. You take away any leverage you have on maybe a free agent or another pick you're trying to get out of it. And one thing, too, I didn't project Paulo going first. I think very few, if anyone, did. There hasn't been much of a backlash for him going first in the media. It's not getting blown up like, oh, yeah, the pick was Jabari, it should have been Chet. People have just collectively shrugged and said, yeah, he's really good. Like, I get it. I understand. Like, first pick overall. It wasn't one of these things where Anthony Bennett gets read first and people are like, oh my gosh, wow, how did he go first? Like, he's not. Paulo's a really good player and had an incredible season and run to the end of the year and is right there in that first tier. So there wasn't just this outcry from basketball people that, like, Orlando missed. They liked their guy. They honed in. They kept it quiet and ultimately got their man first.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we talked about, you know, in the week leading up. Like, these guys are all equal. Like, they're all so close. You can make a case for all three of them. The fact that me, Jeremy Wu, John Givony, John Wasserman, X, Y, and Z, right? We basically all had it as Jabari going one. Mm-hmm. I felt pretty bad about that. Like, I didn't love the fact that we all had that, but, like, also the intel is the intel at the end of the day, right? And, like, you base it off of what you've been told by, you know, agencies, by, you know, people in the NBA, various different people surrounding it, etc., right? So the fact that all of it was consensus, 1, 2, 3, Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, and all of the mock drafts that you saw that are, you know, relevant and everything, right? Like, these are, I felt bad about that, I guess is what I would say, because I felt like consumers were not getting a real picture of how close this was to teams that actually had to go through the process themselves.
We did everything we could here.
We tried so hard. We tried so hard.
Especially down the stretch, but go back if you want to do the cold takes exposed or whatever. I had all three guys at one throughout the year. Say it's a huge cop-out, you idiot. Sure, I'll own it. But I started with Paulo. I went and saw Jabari. That probably clouded me because I actually saw him in person shooting over the top of guys. Okay, he's number one. And then I settled on Chet. It was like, even so, I think before the season I had Chet. I watched some Paulo. I said, ooh, Chet's not ready. Paulo, Jabari, then back to Chet. And I've been in pro Chet for, I don't know, a few months here now. But it's not a crazy difference between the guys. It is how they play and their style of play. But in terms of pure talent, and we've also shortchanged Paulo a little bit, saying, like, he's the most far ahead of these guys, so he doesn't have more to go. I think he does have more to go. Does he have as much to go as Jabari Smith, who we haven't seen as much off the dribble creation, aside from that, like, one dribble left, spin back jumper? We haven't seen Chet be able to play through contacts. We just assume it's there. Well, Paulo's done a lot of things well, but only shoots 34% from three. That goes up. Yeah. He removes that hesitancy. He moves his feet better in space. Why can't his ceiling be the highest? So I'd also, he goes number one. It's like, he's productive, but he's not going to get there. He could get there to the same place that Jabari and Chet could. I value Chet and Jabari more than him. And I did have Jaden Ivey ahead of him too. But for Orlando, I get it. If you think this is going to be the top shot creating scorer, best guy to build around to be a playoff team and winning playoff series, then you take him. And they've trusted their evaluations throughout the process.
Yep, that's totally right. Let's go to the second two teams here, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Houston Rockets. It just seems like Oklahoma City, like was settled on Chet for reasons that I felt like I talked about on the post-draft show. If you want to go listen to that, I think that he's just like such a perfect fit for the way Oklahoma City is one to play under Mark Daigneault. It just seems like all parties there were like, let's get Chet to Oklahoma City. It's the perfect fit. It will allow him to come along slowly. It's a perfect fit in terms of style of play. And everyone just kind of was very happy with the result there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I listened to the Sam Presti introductory press conference of these guys. They asked about Chet. They asked about Oklahoma City's process. And he said what stood out to him the most was they went and watched him practice and kind of spent a day around it. They want to see how he interacted with his teammates because you're this much heralded freshman that's younger. It's a veteran group. And how are you within those guys and them kind of knowing like he's a top three pick, he's going to be here for a few months and take off. And the number one thing they said was he belonged. He looked like he was just one of the guys out there. And then he played. And I was like, ooh, this guy can like actually go and he'll play within the team construct. He'll throw it in the post to Drew Timmy. He'll cut away. He'll set his screens. But he knew like those moments where he's actually able to show like the fully actualized Chet. Oklahoma City knew if they put their arms around it and made it more that than opposed to the complimentary piece, they potentially had a star on their hands. And that's why it looked like he was at the top of their board. If they had 1, 2, 3, they were taking Chet Holmgren.
Yeah. And look, at the end of the day, you and I both had Chet at number one. We really believe in him. We believe in the human being. I think that's what it comes down to for the two of us. Like, we genuinely just believe in that motherfucker. Like, we
I hope. And our boy Andrew Schlecht was at media day and asked him something about like his weight. And are you tired of hearing about the muscle and putting on weight? And Chet said something like a good answer. It was like 2 minutes. He's like, I don't really pay attention to those talk shows that have nothing else to say. I hope we weren't one of those talk shows because like I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be looped into this. I think we've been beyond kind and believers that Chet's body is going to fill out. And it's not going to be as much of an issue as made out to be.
Yeah, no, it might be an issue, but he's going to get the absolute most out of it, whatever it is. Like I have zero doubts in that human being at the end of the day. Like whatever he can do to fix it, he's going to fix it. Maybe he doesn't have it in him, but I'd rather bet on the guy that I know is going to do every single thing imaginable, possible, point blank period in order to make it happen. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you're betting on humans here. And when you're having to draft teenagers, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, in Keegan Murray's case, 21-year-olds, these guys are unfinished products. They're unfinished human beings. And it's tough, I think. So let's go to number three with Houston. I think that Houston probably is a little bit surprised by this, like at the last minute. They certainly had contingencies, I'm sure, but I would imagine they were the one that came off most surprised at the end of the day.
Most surprised and maybe still like the best fit. And that's why I think Houston is one of the winners of the draft beyond the Tari Eason pairing too, is that I love this pick becomes just cleaner because the two guys off the board ahead of them, and it made the decision for them in a sense. But Jabari Smith is a catch and shoot, defensively versatile forward that fits with Alperen Şengün, then also fits in the front court with Tari Eason. Had a Ben Paolo who shot 34% from the college three. It's a little murkier. Paolo is going to get his buckets. However, those much needed Jalen Green and KPJ driving lanes become a lot more congested. So I don't know if Houston was probably like setting up their offense and in their head believing what Paolo Banchero would look like within their personal team constructs. You have to throw all that stuff out the window, but it's not completely back to the drawing board because the main strength of Jabari Smith is shooting, it's floor spacing, it's stretching it out, and that's something that their backcourt needs desperately too.
Right, and in the case of Orlando, looking at Paolo Banchero and the fit there, I mean, we haven't really talked about Jalen Suggs all that much. You and I both love Jalen Suggs. Like, we're huge fans of his and think he's going to be a stud. Like, this is the kind of thing that can really help Jalen Suggs be brought along at the end of the day. Having a guy that can be a legit pick and roll partner. They can hopefully use Wendell Carter as like a floor spacer in the corners. They can, you know, run these 1-4 ball screens with Jalen Suggs to, or, you know, 2-4, whatever position you want to call Jalen. And it's going to be really hard if you drop him. Jalen can kind of turn the corner. He can throw it back to Paulo, who can pick and pop. If you switch it, I mean, good luck trying to stay in front of Jalen Suggs. Like, it's kind of it. And then Paulo's going to murder switches. So, like, it's hard. It for all of the advantages we talked about with Jalen Green, and Jalen Green's a little bit more complete offensively right now than Jalen Suggs is, obviously. It's going to boost Jalen Suggs' development along in just as much of a way as it would have boosted Jalen Green's.
And think, too, the one thing I'll add with Orlando is think of Franz Wagner in that Michigan-y type role off the ball in the corner with those sneaky back cuts, putbacks, the short rolls into touches going somewhere else. You'll have to pick how you defend that. But, yeah, if it's a switch and then Suggs going downhill, you hit Wagner, he makes good plays off the dribble. They become a lot more interesting watch, too, in Orlando.
Yeah, no, that's totally right. Okay, let's get out of the top three. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy Mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where Joy Mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all-natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet, like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Let's talk winners and losers. What teams do you think did the best on draft night? Give me one.
The easy one is Detroit Pistons.
Okay.
You know, that's far and away the first. With getting Jaden Ivey where they did, I never thought he'd get out of the top four, and for him to get fifth. If you told Detroit that somehow you end up with Jaden Ivey, and I've had a few people reach out to me and be like, hey, show was great. Draft show was great. That Jalen Duren pick was a mess. I said, yes, tell the people who are reporting it, because we were trying to like figure it out as they were. I know he's a Piston now, so I apologize if we talk too much on the Knicks there. I love the idea of Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Duren, and that's sort of your young core with Sadiq Bey. I think I just read they're picking up Hamidou Diallo's option or whatever. But then it saves all the money. If you want to go out and get DeAndre Ayton in free agency, great. If not, you have the rim-running, lob-catching Jalen Duren, just the change of pace and change of speed that Jaden Ivey is going to give that team from day one, even if the jumper is not quite there yet. Like, we don't have to get nitpicky. For Cade Cunningham to be able to reverse the ball and know that Jaden Ivey can boogie and at least create scrambles and switches and these advantageous things and get the court tilted, and then you get hit in the corner, and then you have to close out hard to Sadiq Bey, and then he can drive, and you have Jalen Duren the dunker spot. They got better immediately, which the fits don't always like become the best one from the immediate get-go. I felt that way from Jaden Ivey, making them better from the first time he laced up his shoes to play summer league.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, you know, I've talked about the Jaden Ivey fit with Cade ad nauseum. I don't know that we need to do it, but we should talk about Jalen Duren quite a bit more, given that we didn't talk about it on draft night enough.
I'm sorry.
We really tried. We had to move on at a certain point. Like, the thing's coming too fast, you know. It just gets crazy. The Jalen Duren thing is interesting, if only because the day before they traded Jeremy Grant, an hour at The Athletic, James Edwards reported they're going to be players for DeAndre Ayton. And there's no way that you can draft Jalen Duren, give up assets for him, and then go and give DeAndre Ayton a max contract. So it was interesting to me. We knew that they liked Jalen Duren going in. That had been not like clear, but it seemed like Troy Weaver was a fan of Jalen Duren going into the draft. They did well to get him. It only cost like taking on Kemba Walker's deal, basically, and then like a future first round pick they acquired for Jeremy Grant. Like, I think they did very, very well here to get Jalen Duren and use that Jeremy Grant pick essentially to guarantee themselves a lottery pick at the end of the day by taking on the Kemba Walker deal that doesn't really impact all that much flexibility for them.
And they look like geniuses, because if you had the second pick and the sixth pick and you used all the stuff to get there, but they did it to get up, you know, where did Jalen like actually get drafted? Was it 11th?
13th.
So he's 13th. So even better. Like, you get him at 13 where you have him on, 13th at Horns. You have him on your board in the top five or six. There's incredible. Just, you feel like you win based on the draft position, based on what your board was too.
Yeah. Like, the talk before the draft was, oh, there's no way they're going to get number seven for Jeremy Grant, right? There's no way that Portland is going to move that number seven pick for Jeremy Grant. Here's the thing. All they have to do is take on Kemba Walker, and I would imagine that they feel like they got value. They got the same player they were going to take at number seven for Jeremy Grant at number 13. So they essentially got the exact pick that they wanted in the Jeremy Grant deal just by moving it and like forwarding along to a third party, essentially. It was brilliant. Like, I thought it was very, very smart from Troy Weaver. Like, if you look at it in the bigger context of the entire thing that they did, I thought it was remarkably impressive the way that they figured it out. You know, whether or not you and I are high on Jalen Duren, I would imagine Troy Weaver's a little bit higher on him. It's undeniably genius the way that they went out and got their guy using the asset that they had in Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, and just the offense changes too. You're able to add and save all that money in free agency if you don't want to go out and spend it. You have a young guy or two, and if you want to just take it along slowly – and not sign any more veterans and still be bad, these guys will get a lot of reps and they'll improve with time. Jalen Duren is supposed to be a freshman in college. He reclassified up. He hasn't turned 19 until November. He has his best basketball ahead of him too. If he fixes his feet a little bit, fixes defensively, the switches, we pull out the perimeter, a little smarter with his fouls, a little bit more polish, but he's going to play hopefully hard. Like, the motor stays on and they get him revved up and down. Yeah. If he's blocking shots and throwing outlet passes, then trailing the play and here he comes and Jaden Ivey's doing that little scoop back pass to him and he's ripping down the rim. There's a lot of value in drafting a starting center 13th when he didn't have to give up a ton of it for him.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. He is so set up for success right now with Jaden Ivey and Cade Cunningham. Like, undeniably, like, those guys are going to feed him at the end of the day. He is going to be – he played with zero point guards this year at Memphis, and now he's going to play with two three-ish that can actually feed him the ball. And it's really valuable. It's going to be a really – as good as Jalen Duren can be, Jalen Duren is in a position now to reach what his ceiling can be, I think, in a real tangible way moving forward. Look, we have to talk about Houston. Like,
you have to
talk about Houston is a winner here. They were phenomenal. Like, they get three of my top 14 players, three of my lottery guys for the second straight year. And you know, the first year went okay on that. The second year though, will hopefully be a 3-for-3 hit. Tari Eason, you know, I've been high on Tari throughout the process. I think he is one of the most impactful defenders in this draft class. I think that Houston is even going to be able to play small with him and Jabari at the 4-5. I think he's legit strong enough to guard like some fives at the end of the day. I think he can actually hold up, and then you can slide Jabari off at the four and let him use his length to kind of wreak havoc in the way that he's capable of. Obviously, having those two guys in the front court, if they both hit, will allow you to insulate Alperen Sengun in a real tangible way. I love it. I think that all of this made sense for them. And on top of it, they got Ty Washington at 29. Yeah. And by the way, they picked up, I think, two second round picks to move down from 26 to 29 to pick up Ty Washington, who, as I said on the draft show, live show, that while we were talking at number 17, I feel pretty good that they probably had Tari Eason, Ty Washington as their top two options at 17. And they ended up taking Tari, and they were able to wait, and they ended up getting Ty in the first round.
The Ty progression and story and timeline for the last 14 months, kind of nuts when you think about it. He was committed to Creighton. He decommits. He has a great season and kind of the background of high school. Commits to Kentucky, becomes a top 30-ish kid. Preseason, he was 15th, 20th, has a couple good games. We bump him up to 7th, bump down to 30th. We settle at the 20s. He ends up at 29.
Oh, let's be clear here. You bump him down to 30th. I was a believer.
I know you are, but that's sort of the point I'm trying to make here. How did we get here where he actually ended up at 20? Who cares? I had him 29th to 30th. I ended up with him at 24th. Was this kind of non-linear of a draft graph, I guess, of a guy's actual status that you can remember that we still, then you probably more than me, think that he can be a contributor, a really good pick, but he goes 29th and not maybe 9th, what we thought. Because think about it, when the year started, Jalen Duren was first. All right, we quickly learned that was too much. But Ty was take the injury aside, every three games, I kind of changed what tier I had him in as I searched for who's the top league guard in the class. And so it's been really, really all over the place.
Well, why that is that the Kentucky fit was so bad. It was so bad for him to succeed. He had to play next to Sevier Wheeler. He had to play next to Oscar Tshiebwe. He had to play next to Keon Brooks and Jacob Toppin at the four. They had one shooter. The most shooters they had out there with Ty at once was two. It'd be Davion Mintz and Kellen Grady. There was never a time where he had more than that out there. In the NBA, in Houston, he's going to have five guys out there who can shoot. It's going to be him, and it's going to be four other guys, or it's going to be him and Alper and Sengun and three other guys. And Sengun is so good with the ball in his hands on the perimeter that you actually have to push up and guard him on the perimeter. Otherwise, he's going to hit you because you have to close down the passing angles. So the court is going to be so much more well-spaced for him. He brings out a lot of the skills in terms of processing the game, in terms of making high-level reads quickly, that Jalen Green is still working on right now. Jalen Green, for the most part, is, okay, I'm going to take a ball screen, or I'm going to be, on a wing. I'm going to attack closeout. I'm going to be, catching a second side kick out, maybe getting in isolation, attacking, right? Not a crazy passer. I think he got a little bit better at passing throughout the year. I think he's going to be okay as a playmaker for a primary scorer, but that's going to be his role. He's going to be the primary scorer who makes quick decisions and probably has the ball in his hands a little bit more. I think Ty is going to be able to feed off of that in a real way. I think he's going to be, I think that this is another Kentucky guard that we look at, went way too low. We're going to look up and he's going to be the 14th best player in this draft.
Okay. I thought you were going to say hey, there's Tyrese Maxey 2.0. We should have taken him 6th.
No, he's not that, because he's not that athletic. But
exactly. And that's the blend. You have the blend of Jalen Green's super athleticism and Ty's more of a paced game. So even though it's going to be spaced out, he doesn't have that blinding first step or burst. He wants to take mid-range jumpers. So it's still going to have to be a screen, but it helps when Jalen Green's beating the first guy, someone's recovering to you, or here's a ball screen. So that makes your first step better because someone else took that one for you. So that works with the piece around him, and then having those shooters spread out and not playing so much of a combo guard or a two guard when he really should have been on the ball more. Yeah, 29, I like that pick.
Should we talk about what Oklahoma City did here? Moved three first-round picks for Usman Jang. They then stay at 12 and draft Jalen Williams, who was clearly the late riser of this draft. And I had him at 14 on the last mock. I had texted you and our mutual friend you know, what, a couple hours before the draft and said, I don't think he's going to get to 14, mm-hmm. to be honest, just because I thought that someone would jump the Cavs, because I think that it was pretty clear the Cavs, their list, I thought, was Jang, Jalen Williams, and Ochai. So I kind of thought that someone would try to jump them, and Oklahoma City sort of did, because they jumped for Usman and, you know, made it so they stayed and had the extra pick for Jalen. What was your thought on those final two Houston or Oklahoma City picks in the first round that were a bit strange, just like a bit off the beaten path from certainly where you and I have those guys? I don't know about ranks, but like, you know, certainly with Usman, like, we weren't quite as high as giving up three first round picks for Usman Jang.
I wasn't for Usman. I have him about 20th. For Jalen Williams, I think I had 15th or 16th, but like, I get it. And I liken it to have to do it. Josh Primo last year. Did the Spurs want to take him as high as they did? No, but they knew teams 3-4 spots below were forcing their hand that, like, if we're going to do this, we got to do now. So for Jalen Williams, if that's your guy, Usman Jang, if that's your guy, you have these assets. You have all these picks. Empty the clip. If it's going to take three lottery-protected picks to get the guy that you believe in, I wouldn't have done it necessarily for Usman Jang. But if that's what it takes, then these are the reasons you do the trades. You want to get better in the draft. If you love them, go do it. You're not going to get better sitting on the sidelines and waiting and picking 26th. If you can get up there and take three guys in the lottery, then more power to you. They want to build around length. They want to build around IQ. They love the late riser of Jalen Williams. Also in that press conference, Sam Presti admitted, said he really wasn't on our radar as much as all these other guys, but he beat down the door in the process. He was awesome at Santa Clara. He was awesome at pre-draft. He came in, crushed all his individual workouts. That's how you get noticed, a late riser with a chip on his shoulder. And they loved Jalen Williams so much, they drafted another one. They took two Jalen Williams. That's how enamored they were with him as a prospect. They had to take the guy at Arkansas too, which is amazing, because I looked this up and they did the Spider-Man like meme to each other about like pointing back and forth.
The best
is that one goes by, so Jalen Williams from Santa Clara goes by J Dub. Jalen Williams from Arkansas goes by J Will. So have fun with that, media out there. In short, I like the way that Oklahoma City is building. They're believing in whatever process they've kind of created, and get the prospects and use the picks to get those guys that you have at the top of your board.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's something that we talked about, I think, on the draft show. I can't remember if we talked about it on the draft show or if I wrote about it afterward. All of that blends together now. But Oklahoma City is clearly building around this idea of the intersection of positional size and skill. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a 6'6" point guard. Josh Giddey is a 6'9" guard.
Guardish,
basically. Yeah. Who's like an incredible processor of the game and elite level passer. Jalen Williams is 6'6" with 7'2" wingspan, can dribble, pass, shoot, came up as a lead guard. Usman Jang is 6'9", 6'10", and he is essentially like point forward, and he's a passer. He has all these skills as a playmaker with the ball in his hands. Obviously, Chet is, you know,
all 7 foot tall. Whatever you just said. Yeah.
All of what we said, all
the above. All the boxes. Check all that apply. Keep checking. That's who he is.
Yeah. So it's just very clear what they're building around now. And I think it's fucking brilliant. Like, it's not like this unbelievable concept, right? It's not this like, oh my God, it's so crazy. They're just drafting the big, tall guys with skill who can like shoot and score and pass and dribble, right? But when you actually go about it, utilizing the assets that you have at your disposal, just taking those guys, utilizing those assets, thinking those guys are going to hit, or, you know, if those guys hit, they're going to hit bigger than other guys do. I think it's incredibly fucking smart. And really very few other teams have done this yet at this point. Like, I would say Boston kind of, but not really. Like, even Jalen Williams to an extent in the second round from Arkansas, like 6'10", can dribble, pass, and some people think he can shoot. Jalen Williams from Arkansas certainly being one of them, thinking that he can shoot. So they're just using every asset at their disposal to get these guys that they strongly believe have this type of skill in their game, have this type of skill set, have this type of toolbox, and they're going from there. And I love it. I love absolutely every second of it.
Was Oklahoma City so in on Chet, like so in, that they saw Santa Clara because they're watching Chet, like, ooh, take Jalen Williams? Did they watch the Arkansas game of the tournament, like, take that Jalen Williams too? Were they just like so singularly focused on full Chet that like you had to take all the pieces there?
That was a good Jalen Williams.
It just started spinning. I was like, whoa, I don't know what's going on here. I'd like to mention one more team. Can we talk one more kind of winner?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I want to go with the San Antonio Spurs because similar to your Houston thing about three guys in your top 14, I had three guys in my top 18 in Jeremy Sochan, Malachi Branham, Blake Wesley. So you're getting younger. You're adding shot creators. They're all 19 years old or so. Josh Primo is 4 months older than that crew, just to kind of frame like the age thing. But I like that beyond just the haul on draft night is it gives you this built-in contingency plan for two danglers they have in a roster. With Jakob Poeltl entering free agency in a year, Jeremy Sochan could play next to him right now, or if he goes away, he can play the five. You have some length out there. You can move some pieces. Dejounte Murray, he was mentioned in like some trade talks. Whether that's real or not, now you have three guys that are there too. What are you laughing at?
You're getting so close on Dejounte Murray's name. God.
I thought I was there, man. I was like, it's one like little silver.
You're getting so close.
Dejounte. But if he's traded, right? If he's not traded, you now have three guys right there that you plug and play. You don't have to redraft. You don't have to sign anybody in free agency. You get younger, get some assets. Yeah, that's all I got. I thought I did well.
Yeah, no, I was a little bit lower on Wesley and Branham than you were, but same tier at the end of the day, right? And I actually think that for San Antonio, these are guys that they have had success developing their types in the past, right? Blake Wesley is a crazy shot creator athlete who really needs to learn to shoot. Spurs have had great success teaching guys to shoot on some level and like getting the most out of that. Malachi Branham needs to extend his range out. The Spurs have had really good success, for instance, expanding Keldon Johnson's range out. Jeremy Sochan, like, I just totally believe in that guy, and I'm really glad he went to like a very competent organization that will develop him, because I think that he is going to be a very, very good player. Do you have any losers here?
I think it's too early to say losers. The perceived
Like doing losers.
I don't either, because there's differences, and I talked about this last week. The Kings, I love Keegan Murray, so I'm not going to say they're a loser. I still think you take Jaden Ivey. And the Knicks are not losers, but it's worth mentioning here because that's been the chatter. People are mad at the Knicks. So you didn't walk away with like a pick. They stack some picks. They clear some cap space. I'm a draft romantic. I am. That said, there's multiple ways to build and improve your roster. The Knicks are going a different direction for it. That doesn't mean they lost the draft because they didn't come home with whoever they were supposed to take at 11 or what have you. Like, that it's okay. Like, you don't have to have picks every year in order for this to work. They want to go sign somebody in free agency for $100 million. You need to get some stuff off the books. So
coming into the draft, if you would have told me that they could have gotten three first round picks for the number 11 overall pick,
do it.
Take it.
Do it.
Go.
Blindly say do it. Run. If for whatever reason one of our top three guys slips down there, maybe, but if that happens, something is very wrong. So on paper, on surface level, take the three picks, punt on this one in a draft that some weren't as high on. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Maybe they just thought the value for getting three picks instead of taking one that they were lukewarm on, it was better off that they walked away.
Well, and for the Knicks particularly, it's better off for them because they have a real ability to package all of these things being in a major market. People do want to go play for the Knicks. They're going to be able to package all of these picks moving forward for a potential star. And I think that's what they're trying to do at the end of the day. They're trying to create a cache of assets that will put them in the mix. Now, I didn't like the second set of trades they made at number 13. I think that using 4 second round picks essentially to get off of Kemba Walker and what I think is a little bit of like first round draft capital, not in terms of picks, but in terms of like potentially sliding down and not getting as valuable of a pick. I think that's a large price to pay and I don't love it, to be honest. But at the end of the day, like picking up 2 extra first round picks for number 11 trounce or like way overvalues, you know, giving up 4 second round picks at the end of the day, I think. So yeah
losers.
Like
not losers. Take that.
And they do, they do get off of the Kemba Walker deal, which is something they seem set to do. I don't know if I love the whole big picture of what they're trying to do, but I get it, at least, is what I would say.
I do too.
Okay. You want to talk about draft pathways?
I do.
Give me some tips.
I'll start the pathway. So there's different strokes for different folks. There's different ways you can do this. Most notably, Overtime Elite, the G League Ignite in college basketball. I'm just going to set aside EuroLeague right now for the time being. So for Overtime Elite, they had no guys drafted, right? Which I feel is sort of unfair. I never saw it with John Montero. I went down to Overtime when he was slotted the 20s. I left saying, I don't think he's a first-round pick. I didn't think like undrafted. I thought 40s or 50s at best. I like Don Barlow in the 50s. He goes undrafted, so it's not like this huge swing really. But they're much better a year from now with the Thompson twins, with Jayson Gortman, then more talent 24 and 25. This is year one. It was a work in progress. So people that are just punting on it, that's really not a fair thing to do. For the G League Ignite, some people said it was a loss because Jaden Hardy slipped. I thought it was a win with 2 first-rounders and Dyson Daniels and Marshawn Beauchamp. You're a year away from Scoot Henderson being a presumably top 3 pick. So you've had 3 lottery guys in 2 years in Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Dyson Daniels. Another one in Scoot Henderson. Never going to be perfect. Guys slide and rise all the time. But for me, like, isn't that a success of what they've done? They're not going to have like the top high school guys that just go, you have 4 guys really invested in, they go 2, 7, 11, and 14 every year.
Yeah. I think that this year was a much bigger success for them than last year. And really? The reason for that is Dyson Daniels, we had as what, like, you know, something like 15 coming into the year. He goes 8. Outrage. He has a great year. They had their biggest success story like in their 2-year history this year with Marshawn Beauchamp or Beauchamp, like undeniably a guy that is an enormous success story. He came from fucking Yakima Community College after being like a 4-star recruit because he decided to go train in the Bay Area and that didn't really work out in the way he was hoping. And then he goes home to Washington, plays at Yakima Community College, and Rod Strickland like basically spots him when Marjan was being repped by Mike Miller. And Mike was like, yeah, you need to come out and check out this kid. Right. And, you know, Rod Strickland comes out and says, yeah, Ignite, let's do this. That's great. And this kid becomes a 1st-round pick.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. Like that is the development pathway success story that I think the G League Ignite needed. Like they needed someone like, you know, Isaiah Todd to jump into being a 1st-round pick. They needed someone like Michael Foster. Like, you know, I know Dacian Nix fell last year, obviously, but like they needed someone like this essentially to point to say our program is getting kids better. We are developing kids. Not just, you know, guiding them through their post high school year. Like really all they had to do with Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga, right? That's really all they had to do last year. I know that Jaden Hardy fell. I get that. And I get that there's consternation over that. I mean, at the end of the day, I think this year is a real proof of concept for them. And honestly, I really wonder if they don't have the success that they had this year with Dyson Daniels and Marjan Beauchamp, do they get Leonard Miller? Right. Do they get, you know, some of these other guys? I don't know, but I think the Ignite this year should be very proud of what they were able to accomplish, is what I would say.
Likewise. And there's real proof of concept, like you said. It's not just the guys who are ranked in the top 10 of high school come here for a year, they're drafted in the top 10. They actually bumped a guy up to the first round. If you told me Marshawn was going to be a first-round pick as a one-and-done a year ago, 2 years ago, I'd say you're crazy. Like, I kind of forgot about him. I knew he was doing the training thing. I didn't know the junior college thing until he went to the Ignite. I said, well, where has he been the last year? Went back, and those highlights are comical, if you want to dig back in the archives.
Hysterical.
Of him playing there. Just doing whatever he wanted. So congrats to him. Congrats to Ignite. But the biggest congratulations, I think, are in order to college basketball. And my guy, Eric Bossy, over at 24/7 Sports, wrote an article on this. Here's why. 12 of the 14 lottery picks, yes, I'm counting Shaedon Sharpe, played in college. The exceptions are Dyson Daniels and Usman Jang. 26 of 30 in the first round played in college. 14 of those 26 were multiple-year college guys. Name, image, and likeness helps. Playing a football stadium on national television in front of millions of people in the Final Four helps. All the critics saying college sports and basketball are crippled because of players getting paid doesn't seem to be the case. This was like as much of a banner year for college basketball in the draft that I can really remember since the influx of international players and the one and done thing coming into existence. Multi-year college guys going, producing, getting better, and then getting drafted. The names called on draft night.
Yeah, look, I get what you're saying, and I think it's good that this happened. I just think it's cyclical at the end of the day.
But next year is
going to be, we have the Thompson twins, we have Scoot Henderson, Leonard Miller's probably going to be a first round pick. Mm-hmm. We have Victor Wembanyama. We have a really good international class that I think should be expected to, you know, put four or five first rounders in. Like, we're not going to get as much of that this year, or next year, I guess, is what I'm saying. And our reaction to that shouldn't be, oh, college basketball is dying, or whatever, people will say next year, right? Well, that's what will happen.
They'll have 26 people, and that'll be 14. So graphic will just be like down, like, oh, what happened to college basketball during the recession?
Is it dead?
Yeah.
Did NIL help anything?
Then next year will be 20. It'll go back up. Some people will form more collectives for their teams and programs, and we'll poke holes at it. So, yes, it's cyclical. Everything's cyclical. Are we going to have three big men drafted 1, 2, 3 in any draft going forward? I don't know. But it happened this year. So college basketball, take your wins. We can get it. And this was an easy one to say was a victory.
All right. Favorite second round picks. Let's just kind of rapid fire through a few things at the end here.
First one is EJ Liddell, 41 to New Orleans Pelicans. But the one I want to expand on here, I love Ryan Rollins, 44th to Golden State. Sometimes second round stuff works, and the Warriors have already said, Bob Myers has said publicly, that they slotted Ryan Rollins as part of their 15-man roster. Like, they loved them. They had him significantly higher. They couldn't believe he fell down as much as he could. That kind of scoring and creation from a combo in that system with the pieces that around him, I really, really liked. I had him significantly higher. I knew he wasn't going to be a first-round pick, but still in my first round board grade, I had him 24th overall. So I love the pairing between those two.
Yeah, I had him at 31, 32, something like that. I had him much higher than where they took him. I really like Ryan Rollins. I love his creativity. I love his ability to get his own shot. His finishing around the basket, his length, his mid-range game is very high level. You just need to shoot threes, and there's nowhere that's going to do a better job of teaching that, I would imagine, than the Golden State Warriors. The EJ Liddell thing was weird. I had gotten some indication in the 12 hours before the draft started that there was a bit of a worry from the Liddell camp that, like, they weren't sure how this was going to go. You know what I mean? Everyone had him mocked as a first, but they weren't like 100% there. And I ended up moving EJ down to 27. I'd been told like Miami, you know, he did like him, but like whether or not, you know, they would take him was like totally up in the air. But I'd kind of heard that like that could be a thing, that like his name was falling a little bit. And that is surprised. I was surprised by that. I was surprised by how that worked out on draft day, if only because he is versatile. He is a guy who defends at a reasonable level, and he shot well this year at the very least, on top of being an All-American. Like, I've never been quite as high as like the consensus community on EJ, where they had him as like a lottery pick throughout the year. I never had him, I think, as a top 20 guy, like at any point period. So I was never there, but I was also surprised that he ended up falling out of the top 35 even.
Yeah, I had him 21st. So a big dip for me. So then who is your second round guy that you liked, either fit or player?
Oh, I love Jaden Hardy to Dallas. Like, look, he was the highest ranked player on my board. He was the only guy in the top 20 for me that didn't go in the first round. Yeah, I mean, Jaden Hardy going 37 to go play with Luka Doncic, be like, you know, a second side scorer, and hopefully, you know, learning to become a little bit more unselfish, because I think everyone in Dallas, when you're playing next to Luka, has to have a level of unselfishness, right? I think it's a good developmental spot for him, and we'll see if it works. Like, Dallas, I think, was probably ecstatic. Like, I had heard pre-draft that like Jaden Hardy was very high on Dallas's board at 26 if they didn't move 26 in the Christian Wood trade.
Yeah, that second side score, I'm just looking to confirm, it's sort of what they wanted out of Tyrell Terry, and it didn't work out. But to kind of have that guy off the ball to score and take some of that pressure off of Luka, that's not a bad one.
And on top of it, we don't know what is going to happen here with Jalen Brunson in the next week.
It's going to be expensive, regardless of what happens.
To get some insurance for if Jalen Brunson leaves, I think is, you know, Jaden Hardy's not going to be able to step in this year and play, but I think that some longer-term insurance for Jalen Brunson is valuable.
And the other one that I thought of after the fact, after the draft show that we did, was the guys that are sort of our real pre-draft upside swingy players. Pat Baldwin Jr. ends up with the Warriors. Peyton Watson was traded, ends up with Denver, correct? Max Christie with the Lakers. Any of those guys stand out that like, ooh, that one might actually work there?
Keep going. We know who you want to get to.
Oh, I already said Josh Minor on the wrong team, so he's on Minnesota. Is that who I'm supposed to get to?
Yes. Yeah.
John Hollinger stole my line. He did the Robin Williams son of a stole my line when you guys did the article on who would pick. He picked mine out like 14 times in a row. So yeah. I feel like I'm not the conductor, like I'm still on the train. But of those, of that grouping there, you can even say Bryce McGowan's too. Were any that, yeah, the Patrick Baldwin Jr. screams to me that might work. And any insight on those from you?
That's the most interesting one to me, is Pat Baldwin. I don't know what to make of that. And I didn't like Pat Baldwin's tape at all this year. I did not think it was very good. I was worried particularly on defense about his ability to stay in front of like guards. I thought that the Horizon League guards that he played this year burned him pretty badly. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Like, can you imagine a better fit than Golden State? He is going to shoot. Like, I don't care that he shot 26% from three this year. He's going to shoot it. Like, those mechanics are too good. He shoots it too well off of movement. His balance is too good. He's going to make shots. He's center sized. He's like 9'2.5". I don't think he's Kevon Looney in terms of like being able to like change his game. Cause for people who remember high school Kevon Looney, like high school Kevon Looney was like a point forward that like brought the ball up and down the court, like in Milwaukee, and did like all kinds of
definitely like a
stuff.
Bruising 3-point forward where you knew like this is never going to work in the NBA. So he did a good job in altering and shaping his game to what was needed. And now played every single game this past season as an NBA champion. I don't think that Pat Baldwin Jr. necessarily has that body, but there's going to be some altering and shifting for him to get on the court.
Right. And he's not going to become Kevon Looney in terms of just like being tough and being physical and like doing that. But Golden State has now proven that they are able to mold players around this core to fill boxes that they need. And I think that is one of the best potential outcomes for Pat Baldwin. At the end of the day, I really think it is. I think that this is a terrific, this is as good of a landing spot that Pat Baldwin could have gotten point blank. And I'm really happy that he got it.
I am too. And like a lot of these guys, we want them to figure it out. We're not telling them to figure it out.
Yeah.
But for a team and a player that Golden State just won a championship. They don't need anybody right now, right? They have three lottery picks on their bench, not playing in James Wiseman, Moses Moody, and Jonathan Kuminga. But if this guy can push him over the edge and you take a flyer on him that a kid who was ranked in the top 10 of his high school class, we mocked in the top 10 to start the season. If he gets his mojo back and can be in these little spurts and those spurts extend into longer runs, it could be worth it, 20th overall. They can afford to take that swing more so than other teams can.
Yeah, totally. Do you have any of them that you want to talk about in that mix?
No, that was kind of like my grouping there. I like it's yeah. The Golden State Warriors win the championship and add two picks from 28 to 44 that I really like. Those ones. I laughed when Isaiah Mobley ended up being on the Cavs with his brother. It's like we're running the play, same play back. But everything that I heard about him is that he was you were a big fan throughout the year. You said you'd probably end up getting drafted somewhere. I think had him in the 50s.
I had him at 40.
Oh, much higher than I did. So I don't know if that's just like a breather off the bench for Mobley to Mobley or what we got to do there. If it's the Bucks move with adding all the Antetokounmpo brothers, but it did raise my eyebrows when I was like, oh, great. Here we go. We're putting them together now.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. I don't know. I think that's it. This is our the end of the 2022 draft cycle. This is the last one. We're not doing any more 2022 draft cycle stuff.
It's weird. I can close the Google Doc and my closing argument, Your Honor, for this draft class. And I like to bring it back afterwards. And then when I open my eyes the day after the draft, I can actually digest information and videos and clips of the drafts. I love the raw emotion. Marshawn Beauchamp crying when he was drafted, then he's on stage. Jalen Williams, Jay Will from Arkansas, had a draft party and had a bunch of his family and friends gets emotional. He thanked them for supporting him. Jaden Ivey at his press conference with Detroit was presented with jerseys of three family members that played high school, college, or pro sports in Detroit. So we can pick holes in guys' games, and I feel we're generally overwhelmingly positive. But nights like the draft, I'm rooting for everyone's success. It's reaching a lifelong dream, and the emotion is sometimes hard to hide. And now the NBA is big business, and no one cares about your previous reputation. You're fighting for your spot. You're fighting to get meaningful minutes. Celebrate it. Enjoy it. And these guys, the real world and work starts now. But I'm happy that they got to this point.
Yeah, totally. And I'm totally with Matt on this. Like, I am ecstatic for all of these kids that got drafted. One thing we've talked about throughout the year is that this class, maybe not the best class in the world. I kind of made a case in my wrap-up thing at The Athletic. Maybe this class is a little bit better than what we think it is, purely on the basis that the guys who were drafted fit the absolute direction of where the NBA is going. There were no guards under 6'3" drafted in this first round. Like, no,
yeah.
Or no, maybe, well, no, yeah, none. Yeah, because Ty Ty is, I think, 6'3", but yeah, Kennedy didn't go in the first round.
38.
So, yeah. No small guards went. Really, only Mark Williams and Walker Kessler went as true big plotting, you know, centers, rim runners, you know, et cetera. Limited guys, right? It's a lot of versatility, a lot of wings, a lot of guys that fit the paradigm of where the league is going now. A lot of versatility, a lot of switchability, a lot of lot of guys that really it's not trying to fit square pegs into round holes anymore in the NBA, where teams' draft strategy maybe wouldn't match their what their coaches were trying to do on the court, right? I wonder if there's a world where we look back at this draft now and we see that because teams have gotten smarter at looking at who they should be evaluating, maybe there won't be as many all-stars, but maybe this will end up being a bit deeper of a draft than maybe what we said at the time.
good depth, and now it's like, you know, you can hear the Green Day Time of Your Life starting as we talk so eloquently about how we like this process. We talked about the race for number one starting in November on Paulo, Chet, and Jabari, and it came down to the last second. Like, how amazing is that too? And three guys that we've all advocated for what their strengths are. A lot of guys in the lottery, I feel the same way. A lot of younger guys that now that they're with a franchise, they can develop, and you can't hide in the Big Ten, and you're going to have to be exposed and see if you can guard in space, and you're going to get yanked if you don't defend. Like, if you're hitting some mid-range jumpers, a three here and there, you have to defend. You see that on NBA floors. You see on NBA playoffs, guys that are hunted, that can't move their feet, that can't switch. So there's a heavy dose of reality coming, but I ended up liking this draft more than I thought I would too, say in like December.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think a little bit. I'm still a little bit questionable on it, but I do wonder if there's just like that pathway where we could look back and say, like, this is the reason that people got this wrong. It's because people have gotten better, evaluators gotten better at finding the intersection of size, skill, passing ability, you know, defensive switchability, versatility, etc. Okay, this is it. Matt, 2022 is done. Let's get moving. Let's do some more.
Man, wild. Kind of hard to believe.
Oh, man. So, real quick, before we get out of here, thank you to everyone who listened to the show this year. It's by far the biggest year for the show. Like, laughable numbers so far. Like, the draft show, the live draft show was super successful based on what we were hoping for. And then on top of it, all the stuff before then has been so, so successful. And it's largely because of the listeners of the show. And that's you guys. And thank you, thank you, thank you so much for listening, for putting up with our bullshit, for just all of it. We just have so, so much fun doing the show. So thank you all for that. Matt, anything?
And especially, is it Everyone Needs a Smile? Whoever it is.
Everyone Needs a Smile.
I'm shouting out that person because they thumbnail, they clip out like how long we talk about each prospect and player. And at the end of the draft, the person who does that wrote and said, "Hey, I'm taking a break." And our new producers are like, "That guy can't, guy or girl, whoever is, can't go away." Like, that's like the best part of the YouTube channel, logging on there. So thank you to you, whoever is that does that. Thank you to the person who is yelling, I guess, in the YouTube comments that we didn't do the second round. Our idea was we're going to do a lottery or through 20 picks, and we're like, we're kind of rolling. And it seems like a lot of people are watching here. So we kept going. Same thing Sam said. Can't say thank you enough. The online comments, the people I saw out at the New England Prep School event this weekend said, "Hey, we love you guys. We watched the show." I was surprised how many people actually like watched the show on their laptop while watching the draft. I thought it was really cool. Meant a lot to me. Sure, meant a lot to Sam. So thank you guys.
It does. Yeah, no, it really, really does. Before we get out of here, movies.
Movies. All right.
Have you watched?
Look, Combo Pack. So I caught up on 4 episodes of The Boys, season 4 here on Amazon Prime. So I feel good about that.
My wife and I are catching up on season 2 right now.
Yeah.
It's fun. I don't know. There's like just something that like I can't quite connect with
sure, for some but reason. I enjoy now the satire and the carryover into real life, and as we get crazier in the world that we live in now. I also did not know this, that I'm a fan of Below Deck, as I've talked about on this program in the past. There was a season I missed this last year, and it was Below Deck Down Under. So we were in Australia. I feel like we were hanging out. So my wife and I have watched maybe 4 episodes of that. My son convinced himself this week that Christmas was on Tuesday. So we woke up at 5:30 in the morning. We had a beach day today. He thought the beach day was all week. Long story short, I've watched a lot of Disney movies. We have covered Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 this week. That's the only actual real movie that I've watched.
How did Avery react to the first 3 Toy Stories?
He gets so set in his ways that he wants to watch the same thing over and over again, but he's in. He's really in.
Okay,
good. Like 2 ended. He's like, "Is there another one?" Like, yeah, run it back. Yeah, run on 3. So I think he watched 3 back-to-back today after we got home. Which is good. Training up right. Watch it again. It's like Miracle. They're skating, just except they're watching Disney. More importantly, your show, you're back. The brain is back in Vicini land. What movies were you able to consume post-draft?
So watched Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, the Nick Cage movie. Finally,
how's that? You're Nick Cage.
It's fun.
You're close to talking fan club.
Yeah, I like Nick Cage a lot. It's fun. It's really fun. But it's not as fun because of Nick Cage. It's fun because Pedro Pascal is like one of our great working actors. he's just so capable of doing everything. Like, he's fucking funny. He does that like weird sense of like mirth. And like, he has that like knowing grin on his face like the whole time. And he looks like he's just having an absolute blast doing everything. But then like also he can play the Mandalorian and be like super serious and everything like that. Yeah, Pedro Pascal is the best. And we need to get Pedro Pascal in as many creative movies as possible. Then I watched Monstrous with Christina Ricci, which is like this weird thriller horror movie. Look, Laura and I like these like VOD thriller horror movies.
What platform?
Sometimes they hit, sometimes they don't. What did you say?
What platform was it on? You saw in the theaters?
We rented it on Amazon Prime.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. It was, the first hour was not great. Then like the last 20 minutes, we were like, you know, maybe.
Not as bad as me contemplating walking out of Jurassic Kingdom.
No, yeah, not that bad. And then the last thing we watched last night was Cha-Cha Real Smooth, which is on Apple TV, like the Apple TV platform. So like how you watch Ted Lasso, like you subscribe to their platform as opposed to just like the Apple TV. It has Cooper Rafe and Dakota Johnson. Cooper Rafe wrote and directed it as well. It is almost a perfect movie. It is.
I'm seeing 86% of Rotten Tomatoes. So there's a lot of people in your camp.
Yeah. It is genuinely one of my favorite movies I've seen. Like one of my 15 or so favorite movies I've seen in the last 5 years. I would say. Wow.
Heavy praise.
Yeah. It is so fun. It's like very big hearted while also having like this real genuine understanding of, you know, people under 30, which I'm no longer under 30, but I'm close enough still to be able to identify with this. And plus, like, look, it's set in present day, but like to me, it strikes me more as like what my college years looked like as opposed to like what I assume current college looks like. But then again, Cooper Rafe is like 25. So who am I to say this? The dude is just so likable. It's like watching Tom Cruise, like in Risky Business or Cocktail, where you just go, like that's a guy. Like that's the next guy. Like you can just see it. We turned on the movie and within 10 minutes, my wife was just like, oh my God, this guy is unbelievably likable.
Like a poor man's Miles Teller.
Different than Miles Teller, for sure. Way different than Miles
just
Teller.
Just all the positive feedback for him from Top Gun. I love that you use the Cocktail reference because that's not a great movie, but it's 20 minutes of like cinematic masterpiece in there with Cocktails and Dreams if you catch it at the right time.
Totally. Yeah, 100%. But yeah, like what that guy does next, I will watch. Like I am wholeheartedly, whatever it is, 100% in on Cooper Rafe at this point. And Dakota Johnson's in this movie. Dakota Johnson rules. She is quickly becoming one of the better actresses in Hollywood, I think. It's funny. I loved it. I absolutely adored it. You should watch it.
That's beautiful. I can now actually add to list. It's been weird this week knowing that I don't really have to watch draft film yet, right? No. It's like I don't really have to dig into Victor Wembanyama's strength and weaknesses and Scoot Henderson jump. We're not there yet. So it's a nice sort of refresh reset too.
It is. Okay, Penny, tell the people where they can find you.
Find me in the gym. I have 4 events the next 7 weeks. Outside of that, I will be on Twitter, Matt_Penny. I'll come back up for air, come back to life eventually, but I'll probably go dark here for a couple weeks too.
Yeah, I was going to say, when is the next time we're doing this? Because we'll probably do summer league at some point. I mean, we're working around your schedule at this point with
yeah, the live period. It might be a tag team partner with the July live period, because it literally like overlaps. Like our event ends, right. Summer League had already started. So that might be a tag in. But yeah, we'll be back. We'll get here eventually.
We'll figure it out. Okay. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back later this week, probably with an off-season preview. And then on Friday, I will try to figure out what we're going to do for free agency for the NBA. I haven't totally made that call yet on what that's going to look like. But I now have time to try and figure it out. So until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.